You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome, everybody, to an off-season edition of the Powder Blue Podcast. Frank Close, Jeff Mosher here. And, Jeff, I think the Phillies literally made me sick because I know that the night of Game 7, I was just so run down and exhausted. I thought it was just because I was spending too much time on the Phillies. And then, man, I was sick with something fierce for a couple weeks. So I couldn't talk. Let alone record a podcast, Jeff.
Yeah, tough business to be in if you can't talk, Frank.
Yeah, look at the good thing with these.
So the Phillies left you speechless. They made you sick, and then you were literally sick. So that's a perfect storm right there.
Yeah, thank goodness for this mute button thing, because like I swear the times I did the radio bits, I only did one or two. See, you still hear it in me.
Yeah.
But luckily I could hit mute like I just did there so I could get through it. But hopefully I'll be fine getting through a podcast, because we have a lot to talk about, Jeff.
Yeah, we do.
And I know that a lot of it's old news already, but I think we're probably more in postseason mode now. But we have to acknowledge, since we haven't had the opportunity to do so, you call it a collapse.
Yeah, I think so, Frank. I think the Phillies, you know, got themselves out more than the Diamondbacks got them out. You know, credit to the Diamondbacks. They definitely had the best relief arm out of everybody in the NLCS in Ginkel. I thought he did a really good job. He's probably the one I would say got the Phillies out. The sidearm guy, whose name is escaping me all of a sudden, you know, he was all right, too.
What are the Nelsons?
You know, for the life of me, the life of me, I'm going to go into this offseason trying to figure out why the Phillies, particularly in game 6 and 7, could not hit 92 to 93 miles per hour from Paul Sewald down the middle. Paul Sewald did not throw great pitches. He threw down the middle, and he only threw about 92, 93, maybe 94. And he blew guys like Turner and Castellanos away. And when you juxtapose that with those same hitters' abilities to take the ball out of the yard against Spencer Strider's 100 miles per hour, it doesn't make sense to me. I know that Ron Darling made some kind of deal out of Sewald's got like deceptive release, so it makes his fastball look a little bit faster than 92 to 93. But come on, I mean, come on. You know what I mean? It was right down the middle. There was no movement on that. So that I'm going to carry that into the offseason and always be sort of bewildered by it. That's not 100% where the Phillies lost the game, but I would have thought, you know, if you had Paul Sewald on the mound against the Phillies 2, 3, 4, 5, even if the Phillies were down a run, that's pretty good for the Phillies. And I was wrong on that. So you can look at a couple of areas where it really turned, you know, especially in those games in Arizona. But that to me just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I feel like they figured out they're just not going to pitch to Schwarber and Harper, and then other bats got cold at the same time. To me, it was like the perfect storm that they're worried about those lefties to the point they wouldn't throw them a strike. As you said, they tended to get themselves out. So I just thought that the combination of that and then also the Diamondbacks, they were pretty good at picking up which reliever was a little bit off and just kept the bats on their shoulders and mm-hmm. really waited for a pitch to hit. I mean, the Marte hit, I think, was the big hit of the series, right? But before Marte came up, it was just like, oh, he's got nothing today. We're just gonna keep the bats on our shoulders.
Yeah. You know, that's true. So we can talk about something that Rob Thompson said this week that I think applies to the postseason, right? As we kind of fold the postseason and the offseason here together. Rob was asked if he regretted any of his decisions in the NLCS. And I think last year when they lost to Houston, he said he didn't. He just, you know, I don't regret bringing Alvarado in and taking Wheeler out. I was managing the way I managed all year long. It's just we lost, right? But he definitely this time said, I questioned some of my pitching decisions, which I'm glad he said, because I think we all did, sticking with Kimbrel as long as he did when Kimbrel was not throwing well. And then he also questioned maybe should he have changed some things with the lineup. Now, going into the NLCS, Frank, we both thought that Alec Bohm probably shouldn't be the cleanup hitter, probably should have been Castellanos the way he swung the bat. Now, Castellanos did not swing the bat well in the NLCS, so that may not have worked much better either. We did mention Real Muto, but the bottom line to me was I feel like once you saw that the Diamondbacks were not going to pitch to Schwarber and Harper, you needed somebody in that four hole that you could rely on more so than Alec Bohm. No offense to Alec Bohm. It's not that he's bad. You just needed somebody who struck fear in right-handed pitchers, especially, or any pitcher, a good right-hander batter. And that guy was not Alec Bohm.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think affect how they approach this offseason. Now we do know that right-handed bat is not going to come in the form of Rhys Hoskins. And by the way, I didn't like that the Phillies kind of originally, well, it was really Rob Thompson said, oh, we'll have a heart-to-heart with Bryce and figure out where he wants to play. I didn't like that they were throwing it on Bryce, but
yeah, that was a little strange.
You knew that Bryce was going to say, oh, I'll do whatever's best for the team. And so ultimately they came out and said, well, yeah, Bryce said he'll do whatever's best for the team. And then we think that we're going to keep him at first base. So Rhys Hoskins era is over. I kind of expected that. You know, I thought even going into the season, they were going to try to enjoy the ride for one more and then that would be it. But, maybe they can get that right-handed back though, in terms of an outfielder.
I know the Mike Trout is the hot name, right? We'll see. I mean,
I guess we got to talk about Mike Trout just because everybody's going on now. I know the Angels kind of put cold water on the idea that they would trade Trout, but I mean, I think the responsible thing for the Angels to do is trade Trout, considering they're losing Ohtani and, you know, they really need to get a reset. They kind of went for broke last year, trading off their prospects. Like it's going to be a lean few years out in Anaheim. So I think that they should trade Mike Trout. That's the smart thing to do, at least help, even if it's symbolically turning the page some. But the question with that, though, is, what's a trade going to look like? And I think it's going to be really hard to put together a trade. Like, I went through this on 97.3 because, of course, it's South Jersey and he's from South Jersey and they all want to know. But like a trade for Trout has to be like, well, they take Castellanos back because that deflects some of the money. And then they also the Angels ship in some more money down the line because he's got 7 years left on that deal. And, you know, my worry is it's going to turn into a Giancarlo Stanton deal, like, you know, when the Yankees sure. took Stanton with all those years left, and he had an absolutely terrible year this year, and they're stuck with him for many, many more years. So, you know, I worry about the Phillies being stuck with too many guys that are all aging at once, you know, with Turners yes. and the Harpers. But I mean, might he be helpful for a season or two? I know sometimes you go for broke, and but I don't know. It just seems like such a complicated trade to make, and I don't know what value the Angels would need back,
right?
In addition to unloading some salary.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that any conversation for the Angels that starts with trading Mike Trout to the Phillies starts with, I mean, even though he's coming off an injury, I would still think Andrew Painter is probably somebody that other teams would want, right? And I don't know if I'm the Phillies that I want to trade Andrew Painter for a hitter at the moment when I've got a lineup full of hitters. And as you mentioned, a lineup full of hitters who are on long-term deals and who are over the age of 30, when realistically you can address your left field void with a pretty good player that doesn't have to be Mike Trout and won't cost you Mike Trout, and you can probably pick up in free agency. So it's, I mean, I think the concept of it is way better than the reality of it. And I really would not want to touch. We've talked about this. Phillies, not like their farm system is that deep. I mean, the one guy that maybe I don't know what other teams would offer for Trout, right? Because maybe other teams have the same fears that you just echoed, Frank. You like what we saw with Johan Rojas. You like what you see with Brandon Marsh. If you want to maybe trade Crawford's kid, what's his name again?
Justin
Crawford. If you can get Mike Trout by trading Justin Crawford, Castellanos, and a Griff McGarry or McCable, maybe that's a conversation that's worth having, right?
But I think if you're the Phillies, you need to tell the Angels to give us back a pitcher we can use right now. You know, I would say this trade if you're actually having those discussions, it's going to get harder and harder as you go along to actually get to the finish line.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't put it past anything because I do feel like I can see the owner. I can see John Middleton sort of issuing a decree to fold and to Dombrowski saying, hey, if this can be done, do it. Right. Like I can see him saying, be smart about it. We don't have to give up our best number one guy, but if there's a possibility that we can make this work, then make it work. I can see that happening, you know?
And like we're seeing with some of the other decisions, certainly the Phillies are not operating from an emotional attachment standpoint. Like I know, like wow. Philly area in South Jersey, they love Mike Trout. You mean every time he appears on the screen at an Eagles game, like what do the fans do? You know, like they
merchandise sales if he's here.
Well, this is a good segue then, because Mike Trout's jersey number 27 might just be available.
Real quick. I have to ask you this before we move on. With the Rhys Hoskins thing, because they've already made it clear they're going to move on, but did they give him the qualifying offer?
They did
anyway?
Not.
They did not. That's pretty interesting, because he's going to get more than the qualifying offer, and you have a chance to get a first round pick, right? If somebody
the picks are way less now. So,
Is it? Did it change? Yeah. I forgot that it changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus there have been enough changes where it became such an encumbrance upon the teams trying to sign players that it would hurt the players' ability to get signed. So, yeah, it's not like that anymore. They would there's a whole lot of scenarios that I would need the whole list to go down the list, but as to what you're going to give up. But yeah, it's not
that changed in last year's CBA negotiation, most recent one,
the last one. I'm trying to think now. I think like because the Phillies signed a couple qualifying offer guys last year's, it would cost them a 2 and a 5,
right?
I think to sign somebody now with one, so which is, you know, something you'd want to avoid because you know.
But wouldn't you still just give it to Rhys anyway to get a 2 and a 5, knowing he's going to get more than the qualifying offer? Wouldn't you just?
I don't think he will. Qualifying offer is about $20 million this year. So do I think he could get a 1 year $20 million deal? Sure. But if he had a qualifying offer attached, he might struggle. So because teams don't want to pay. They don't want to pay the terms of prospects. So, you know, money's fine. I think Rhys will do just fine. He'll get He'll get a shorter term deal, maybe to start at some place like San Francisco, where where he grew up, and they could really use somebody him. And I think he's a fit for the Farhan Zaidi philosophy too. So
yeah,
so I think I can see him fit in San Francisco really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Hey, it was a good era for him, man. He was a you know, as much as we complained about the first base defense, and by the way, Bryce Harper played some pretty good first base defense for a guy who's never played there before. I think you can actually say it's an upgrade defensively already. But there's no question, as we talked about, what they were missing in the NLCS against the Diamondbacks, a right-handed number four guy to, after they walk those lefties or not pitch the lefties, to come through with a big hit, even if it's not a home run, even a gapper. That was Rhys Hoskins. He would have been perfect in that spot.
Yeah, I think though that again, as they go on, they will address that, but not because they are emotionally attached to their guy. So I think the reality is Kyle Schwarber and Rhys Hoskins cannot be on the same roster. I just you know, whoever is the DH is going to have to play the field some, you know, because guys get banged up or, you know, need a few days that aren't off days, but you know, get off their feet. So
yeah,
you know, I think we're going to end up seeing Schwarber play some left field still. I mean, you know, even though he's going to be the primary DH, and then you get to the playoffs and he doesn't sniff the field, you know. So I think you can't have both of them. It makes it really too hard to navigate, in my opinion.
I agree with you. And we will probably have a discussion maybe next pod, you know, as we get more into like free agency. Should the Phillies be a little bit more, you know, go after a little bit more outfield depth than they've had in the past, so they, if there is an injury, they don't have to rely on Kyle Schwarber to play, you know, 30, 40 games in the outfield. We can talk about that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And be nice if Jake Cave is not the last out of the NLCS.
I don't consider names depth. I consider actual players who can play the position and win games with as depth.
Yeah, I agree. So, so I was sort of transitioning over to the Aaron Nola talk, because that's like the other big thing people keep asking me when I run into Phillies fans at various places. So, you know, this spring I was thinking that they, you know, when I was down in Clearwater, both sides were saying they wanted to reunite, and I expected them to come to some sort of agreement last spring. And then what ended up happening is spring ended and they did not come to an agreement. So I thought, oh boy, I kind of guessed at the time that, you know, the Phillies would be willing to pay dollars, but if there was an issue, it would probably be in the number of years. And now there are reports that Nola wants as many as 8 years. He's already over 30. Yeah. I just don't know if that's the best idea, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, the one argument you can make in his behalf, well, the two arguments you can make on his behalf is, one, he might get it somewhere.
And he probably will.
He probably will, right. And two, he's not a guy who relies on 98 to 99 to 100. So you're not worried, per se, about losing a few ticks on the fastball, and then you don't have the same guy that you're signing, right? I mean, you kind of know what you're getting with Aaron Nola and how he goes about pitching, and he's not an overpowering guy, so you're not worried about, like, 6 years down the road, what if he's not throwing like that? You're just worried about sort of the inconsistencies and the ability to keep the ball in the yard. But I think from a Phillies vantage point, 8 years would be too much, especially, Frank, when you consider Wheeler is going to be if it's coming up on a contract year. There's going to be a point where you're going to have to pay Ranger Suarez. Going to be a point where you have some other young guys, Stott, Bohm, whatever, to pay. I just, you know, again, money's money, and down the road. But I think you can be in the World Series next year without Aaron Nola, as long as you get yourself a guy who can be a really good number two. And there's a lot of good number two. There are guys who can be a number two or number three, right, who you don't have to spend 8 years and upwards of $25 to $35 million on. You just have to find the right guys. Like the Astros won their World Series with Gerrit Cole, right? Then he went and signed with the Yankees, and then the Astros developed some pitchers, signed free agents, and won without Gerrit Cole. So yeah, you need, if you have Zach Wheeler, I think you're set. You're good. You just need to find a good number two. And there's some pretty good alternatives out there, Frank. Yeah, I think there's some good number twos.
I'm actually not on the Blake Snell train like a lot of people are. But, you know, who I would give 8 years to is make sure I get his name right, Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
I love that.
You know, he's young. So
yeah,
I think
24, I think he is, right, Frank?
Yep. Or 25. Or anyway, I don't know exactly. Yeah. But Yamamoto would be, he could get the biggest pitching contract out there. I think they're just craving, you know, he's somebody who's, albeit in Japan, established as an ace. I just think that could be a real opportunity there. I know a lot of teams are going to want him, but if I'm the Phillies, I would at least try.
Go 100%. I think you have to try.
Cause he only costs you money, right? That's the type of player that the Phillies would like, right? You know, but he is posted and, yeah, you know, let's see here. I'm just looking at New York Post. You know, a scout says he could be a number three starter. So I don't know. I mean, he's an ace in Japan. Some are calling him a number three. But
I mean, Senkai from the Mets wound up having a really good year last year. Mm-hmm. Not that, you know, every Japanese pitcher should be compared to every Japanese. Or is Senkai from Japan or Korea? Now that I think, either way, not every pitcher from the Asian leagues is going to just come in and dominate just because the other one did. But he was similar in that he started off slow, and then like by the end of the year he adjusts to major leagues and you have yourself a pretty good pitcher there.
Yeah, Senga is from the Japanese league, but no, I think that's a good marker in that what does a talented player over there translate to the United States. I think that's a fair question, right? So and yeah, others who have done it have, you know, demonstrated that it can be done. So especially more and more lately, we're seeing more success coming from mm-hmm. there, you know? But besides that, the other name I think that Dave Dombrowski would like would be Eduardo Rodriguez, who did not, opted out of his deal, even though he turned down a trade at the trade deadline to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. But Eduardo Rodriguez, somebody who Dave Dombrowski knows from his time in Boston, and I think he's a nice pitcher. I know he's not the sexy name, but I think if the Phillies were able to, I think they should extend Wheeler. If they can get another few years onto Wheeler, I think you feel better about losing Nola, because you know mm-hmm. you're worried about the long term rotation and too many holes to plug is gonna make you end up doing things you don't want to do.
Right.
If they extend Wheeler, sign a Rodriguez, I don't know if they would go further than that, and also maybe do a Sonny Gray. That was a name that's come up. Used to work with Caleb Cotham, or were they teammates at the time? I don't know. Cotham wasn't in the league that long ago, but with the Reds, I think their times matched up with the Reds. So, right. And if they like each other, now they always said that Gray was not the big city type pitcher, and he's thrived in the smaller market. So I don't really know what that'll mean for him in Philadelphia, but I think there's some decent options out there. And I'm not really a Blake Snell fan. I think he's going to get a deal very similar to what Nola's going to get. And it would, for the same reasons, it might not be a good idea, but there are some options, I think, albeit not the sexiest ones. But I think the Phillies do need to really, really take a look at that this offseason, because it's 2 years in a row of the trade deadline. They get starting pitchers that end up not helping them in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, be nice if they had deeper rotations to start a season for once, because, you know, remember last spring, like we had no idea who was going to be the number five, and it took a while for anybody to step up as the number five.
Right, right. And by the way, I mean, I think that when you look at their situation, if Nola's your one and you have Suarez as three, Taiwan Walker four, I assume Chris Sanchez did enough to be the five. I mean, I know sometimes these guys can be year to year, but he has to start off next year as the five, does he not?
Yeah, I think he'll get a shot, but would be okay if they brought in too many arms and they had to like figure it out.
Yeah. Now, didn't Lorenzen have one more year?
Lorenzen's a free agent.
Oh, he's a free. Okay, yeah, he's a free. I thought for some reason he had one more year. Yeah, no, I think I am a little worried about the Sonny Gray big city thing, because we have some evidence of it, because I believe it was in New York where he pitched and just didn't go well.
Right.
And Right. And but he has pitched well in Cincinnati and Oakland. And where was he? Minnesota this past year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd be a little concerned about that. I do like him, though, as a pitcher. I didn't think I thought I had him sort of on my mind over an Eduardo Rodriguez, but Eduardo's a good pitcher. And I'm pretty sure. Do we have his innings? I thought he was kind of an innings eater when he's out there, that he can give you, you know.
So Gray or Rodriguez?
Rodriguez.
Let me look it up.
I thought he was pretty good. I mean, he pitched on some pretty shaky Detroit Tigers teams. So I'm not sure how that worked out for him with the bullpen and everything. And what is, you know, he had 34 starts in Boston in 2019.
Yeah, 19.
Yeah, 32 starts with Boston in 2021. So 26 starts last year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, he pitched 152 innings last year. Peak, yeah, he pitched 203. Bad. I think he's someone who still's got some potential there, but he is one advantage to him is there, you know, he is ineligible for a qualifying offer because he had been extended one from the Red Sox when he right. became a free agent. So you can only have that once in your career now. So that's going to give more options where you don't have to give up draft picks. And I think the Phillies will try not to give up some draft picks this time around.
Yeah. Is there anybody you think that might be available on the trade market that is, you know, for like a team that's rebuilding, like the A's are always trading off players because they're always rebuilding every year. Are the Guardians rebuilding? Is Shane Bieber?
That's something people speculate about. You know, they lost Terry Francona. So, mm-hmm. you know, to retirement for his health. So we could see Cleveland. They might try to retool a little bit. I don't know.
Right.
You know, they have a rookie manager in Stephen Vogt now coming in. So it'd be interesting to see what they do, but that's possible. But, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays, I would bet money they make one trade, because prior to this past season, they made a 2-year, $30 million deal with the remaining second year being worth $25 million, mm-hmm. first year, $5 million. So in other words, they paid Tyler Glasnow $5 million this year. Next year, he's going to be due $25 million. So I think the Rays are going to trade.
That would make sense. Didn't they just pull off a trade with the Phillies?
Oh, you know, there's the minor swaps.
I know. I was just messing around.
Those are the types of players that get shuffled every offseason and they're designated for assignment before they even get to spring training, you know, just yes. as your roster builds out. So you're seeing a lot of those little minor moves now. But
good old Michael Mercado in exchange for Adam Leverett.
Yeah, that's I have no opinion on those, to be honest with you.
Right. What is your feeling, though, on the timetable for either McGarry or Abel?
I think they both need to go to AAA and establish themselves. I mean, they could by the end of next year, if not sooner.
Right.
I mean, if it's like if they're pitching well and it's like June or July and you need a starter, you know, that might be mm-hmm. the opportunity to pull one of those guys up if they're pitching well. I mean, just you know, I think Abel progressed through the system the way they expected, and he didn't have a big amount of starts at AAA. Mm-hmm. McGarry seemed to fall apart once he got to AAA. So,
right.
You know, I think he just needs to hit that little reset button and, start from scratch. And I think he'll be all right. But yeah, he did not respond well to that final promotion there to AAA.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a shame because, you know, you might have three real options for your rotation by this year coming up and, with Painter out all year and those two not there yet. There's really nothing in the system that you can really point to, you know?
Yeah. Abel had one start in AAA last year.
It was barely there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they just wanted to give him one look there before the year was up. But, in terms of McGarry, yeah, they put him on the development list for a while, I think, just to get him off the roster.
Right.
And, kind of get things right. So I still have high hopes for him, and
yeah,
who knows, maybe by
I think it would be great if it would be great if we could find a younger guy, like just through the trade market, someone whose name isn't out there. You know, like, again, we'll have to see what the Indians are, or the Guardians, excuse me, are doing. And, you know, the Marlins are in sort of now I guess that they're going back to the Marlins of old, right? I mean, no Jeter, no Kimming, and who knows what they're going to be doing going forward. They might have somewhat of a sale, you know.
Marlins are a mess. The ownership basically decided that the Rays were very successful, so they literally hired their new president of baseball operations away from the Rays, and
right.
Kimming was like, "You're putting somebody in charge of me after what I did for you," and so she bailed. That's I don't understand that completely, but yeah, philosophically, you're probably going to see a shift in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that will mean for, I don't know that even though the ownership changed, it's like still the same.
Right. It's always the same. So you wonder if Alcantara will be on the market. You wonder if any,
well, he's not going to pitch this year.
Oh, that's right. Right. So yeah.
Tommy John, they tried.
Well, Yuri, go ahead.
I was gonna say they tried to have him come back without it last year, and it just didn't work. So same thing with Painter. Right. Like, it was the same kind of situation.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll see what they do. I mean, they do have some good young pitchers with Yuri Perez, right? And Lizardo. So we'll see if maybe they're feeling, you know, itching to move those guys. I don't know.
Yeah. Credit to Kimming for picking up Lizardo from the Athletics. Like,
Yeah.
It's amazing that they could find such a talent to trade like that. I mean, yeah, usually everybody's available from the Athletics, but I don't know. Philly's making a trade, though. I just don't know what they would want to trade.
Right.
So, I mean, I know when they embarked under the Dombrowski era, it was like rebuild on the fly, and it would just be about spending the money. So you have time to develop some players. You know, I'd hate to see them start spending them. You know, I think they need more to come through the system and.
Yeah.
Contribute to the roster.
It's just, well, you know, Castellanos, there was the report that he's on, you know, the Phillies would listen to a trade. You know, Castellanos wanted to play for Miami before he came to Philadelphia, you know.
There you go.
He lives down there. So I don't know. That's why I was thinking maybe something would work out there.
Yeah, that would be if you play matchmaker, but you know, I think one question is what is Castellanos actually going to net you?
It's funny what he could have netted you something after the NLDS, like something fierce, and then after the NLCS, it's like your value is back to being what it is, you know.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know what type of he's certainly not a superstar that would warrant a big load of prospects, but
right,
he's I don't know. I mean, I would say that yeah, you could probably find somebody to play right field is perhaps a little more consistent and a better defender. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know if you need to upgrade that position, you know, so much as you need another outfielder.
I agree.
So, well, there's a lot going to be happening this off season. I feel like we're in for some surprises. I know people have the anxiety over losing Hoskins and Nola, but they got to be replaced by somebody.
Who do you think would be the lead candidate to give Nola an 8-year contract or even a 7-year contract?
Mets.
You think so?
Yeah.
Like retribution for Zach Wheeler?
not so much that, other than they traded their whole rotation and they don't really have anybody to pitch except for Senga and Quintana next year. So.
Yeah. Well, their new GM, though, David Stearns, who's off to a flying start, didn't even get Craig Counsell. Don't they come from the more analytic? See, this is what I find fascinating is like guys with big dollars, right? Go and find the guys who did really well in small markets, you know, and then they find out, well, wait a minute, this sort of becomes like the Boston Red Sox Kyme Loom situation where you're the Boston Red Sox, you have $1 billion and you hired a guy who's really known for building a roster, a farm system through analytics and through shrewd trades and not paying $1 billion for everything. So I kind of wonder how that's going to work out for the Mets in the same vein.
Yeah, well, you
could say that the Phillies had the right marriage finally with Dombrowski, like an aggressive guy who can spend money and lure people with Middleton who wants to do that.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Friedman's done certainly very well for the Dodgers. He was the, you know, the one who went from low budget Rays to the big, big spender. And, but speaking of, we didn't even mention his name. Well, I mentioned his name actually, but not in terms of, where he might land, but I think Shohei Ohtani to the Dodgers is just bound to happen.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. He won't have to, you won't have to move, you know. I know some people said, well, you know, I mean, traditionally, you know, this is not the case every time, obviously, because Senga went to the Mets, but traditionally, you know, people from Japan like to play on the West Coast because it's easier to get home, you know, right?
Yes.
I mean, six hours from here to LA as it is on a plane, and then another six to Japan. Mm-hmm. So I think that the West Coast teams are probably the favorites, and I'm sure the Dodgers can pay him whatever he wants, and he doesn't even have to move his in-season home. So it just seems like it makes too much
inevitable
sense,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the Mets will try.
Sure, but I think the Mariners will try to throw their hat in the ring too. We'll see. I don't know, you know, but you know, I would love the Phillies to at least consider it, because why not, right? I mean, he's the best player in the game. Go for it. Money's not an option. So I would love to hear the Phillies at least was like that mystery team that got that backdoor meeting and said, hey, you know, we'll give you, by the way, what do you think he's going to, what are we looking at, $500 million or more?
You know, if he hadn't torn his UCL, I'd say absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to be over 400. Oh, definitely
I think it's definitely
over 400. I think it's going to be a very.
Mike Trout got over 400, did he not?
Yeah, he did. I think it's going to have to be
Ohtani's going to get five.
It's going to have to be a very creative deal, where they maybe have to build in extra incentives in case he pitches again. I mean, it's very possible he doesn't.
Right.
You know, maybe just at this point, just hangs it up and. Just as a DH, I don't know, or maybe he takes to the outfield if he's not pitching anymore eventually. So, it's that complicates things. I mean, if you're a team who can land him, I think you worry about it later. But
it wouldn't surprise me if the Dodgers just shelled out like $550 million and said it doesn't. You know, we're going to pay you like you're going to pitch again. So right from the start, even if you don't.
Yeah, I mean that might be what it takes to get a deal done, you know. But having two positions filled with one roster spot, I mean that's certainly something hard to compare.
Yeah, not really going to help their pitching much this next year.
Yeah.
Because Kershaw's going under the knife, and my God, he's been pitching forever anyway, and he won't pitch so. You know, but Walker Buehler will be back for them. And Dustin May could come back for them. They expect. So we'll see.
Well, we have a whole off season to go, so I'm sure we'll get to talk about this some more. And thanks for putting up with my illness and a few times I lost my voice in the middle of this, but it's mostly back. So that's good. So we could talk a lot of baseball this off season. I already have my spring training trip booked. And so hopefully, I don't know. I'm already eager for Clearwater in March.
I'm with you. It's not that far away, my friend. It's not that far away.
No, it's not. All right, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
You too.
We'll catch up soon. For now, this has been the Powder Blue Podcast. Frank Close, Jeff Mosher. Catch you soon.